on a text message on the Queen City Motors talk and text line. KSGF uses Fox News updates. As we do, that's correct. On the hour, and even that sounds like a Biden campaign ad. It had a direct quote from Biden, cherry-picked, plus information on how he is getting updates from experts that have talked about how bad Trump's poll numbers are. And that's Fox, let alone what ABC, NBC, CBS is saying. Thanks, Fox. Fox isn't what it once was. It's still much better. You know, I think Paul Ryan, who clearly was an anti-Trump Republican, is... I know at one point he was going to be on some board or something, and you know they got some folks in charge over there that are not in the same vein as the folks who launched Fox. And it's certainly still, I mean, you've got those commentator voices on there, but the news itself, it is it's not what it once was. You're not the only one that recognizes that. We've got Don Luzader. I see.
Did you get your printout yet?
No.
I'll tell you what. I'll run one into you.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
But in the meantime, you can go ahead and use this one.
Oh, are you sure?
Yes.
Okay,
it's
well,
yours.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Paul, the engineer. We were disconnected from everything. Everything, for those listening, was shut down. We couldn't print anything. We couldn't, you know, we were cut off from the world for whatever reason.
All we could do was talk on the radio.
Yes.
That's the only thing we could do.
And during the news, I stepped out, and Rick was... Rick and Nancy over there, KTTS. He was in the hall talking to Paul, and he went back in the studio, and he looked at me, and he said, "All we've been saying is thank God we're not Nick." I said, "Well, you could say that on a daily basis for a number of reasons, but I, you know,
right, yeah.
Because I just, you know, music stations are much different. It's mostly music, and then there's informative and entertaining conversation in between in these little pockets, where this is all." Information, and so it, you know,
yeah.
The perception that I think he had is that it probably would be a little more difficult to do. It isn't, though.
I don't see any sweat on your forehead at all.
No, it's not. It's not as hard as people think.
Yeah. Springfield Green County Health Director says he believes the city's mask ordinance is working despite a new single-day record on Tuesday, but he is asking more people to mask up. 95 people tested positive on Tuesday, a one-day record, followed by 82 additional cases on Wednesday, although apparently about 40 of those came from the Green County Jail as well as nursing homes. Missouri Association of Prosecuting Attorneys opposing the recent move by the governor to give the Attorney General the power to prosecute homicides in St. Louis. Association says local voters should get to choose who prosecutes crimes in their cities. Governor Parson says the proposal will help curb the surge in violent crime. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply, gradually becoming sunny. Do you need this? Because I'm reading it real fast. Okay. All right. Thank you. Gradually becoming sunny, a high today of 89, 70 tonight, slight chance of shower storms tomorrow with a high of 90. Sunday and Monday, sunny, high of 87. So that's definitely doable. It's 70, partly cloudy now. Dr. John Lilly of the Locke and Smith Foundation is with us. How do you do?
Just fine.
Wonderful.
Do you mean that you can't ad lib if you don't have a news feed right in front of you?
I was able to. I did it the last hour. Well, I did have a couple guests. That's what I do. I just book guests, so they have to do all the work.
Okay.
No.
Well, I have. You are very good at ad-libbing and stretching things out. And one of the things I have noticed with good radio talk people is they can say the same thing over and over slightly differently, and you think you're hearing brand new information. So you can,
called vamping.
You can take 5 minutes of information and stretch it out to 20, and it sounds, you know, like, oh, you're just rolling right along.
Yeah,
so.
Well, it's a craft one must use at times, and, you know, like before. You just had nothing.
It's tough to do.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it's you know, on one hand, I think, well, you're sort of going back to the way it was before the internet. But the problem is, before the internet, you had all these, you know, printed materials. You had newspapers, magazines, and don't have that. So you're just sort of left high and dry. Anyway, it happens.
Yeah, Well,
I actually, when things like that happen, I think, ooh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a little bit of a challenge. So, I like it. Not all the time. Once in a while.
I also thought it was interesting that Clay Goddard was praising the mask ordinance when, we're getting more and more cases. And if you look statewide, just the number of positive tests back in April, the middle of April, it peaked at a little over 10% and then slowly went down to about a little over 4% positive tests when they took them. The middle of July, and now has creeped back up to about 6%. And I think it's creeped back up because now they're testing people with no symptoms.
Right.
And as we learned from the Diamond Princess cruise ship back from it was a Japanese ship that the coronavirus went wild on the ship. Well, that was a great laboratory because you had an enclosed environment. And they went on board and, they quarantined them and went on board and tested a bunch of people. And they found out that of the people that tested positive, half of the people had no symptoms.
Yeah.
So there's people walking around out here that had the virus, went through it, had no symptoms. They may have passed it along to somebody else. And now they're, if you were in the Walmart such and such time, you might have been exposed. So now, previously, when there weren't enough test kits to go around, they were in short supply because they just couldn't make them fast enough, they were limiting it to people that had symptoms. And initially, it was people at high risk with symptoms got tested. And now it's if you have symptoms, we'll test you. And I think now that the Greene County or Springfield Greene County Health Department, I think they're testing anybody that wants to now. So when you test anybody, you're going to get people that have no symptoms and test positive.
Well, and something that we've noticed across the country, and I've personally had relayed the stories to me, that sometimes testing is so available, you don't even have to get tested to be tested positive. I know.
That's right.
Two individuals that, well, and there was a story of the Fox affiliate in St. Louis who went, and actually she was tested, and it was negative, but her discharge paper said positive. She was told, oh, no, we just put that. Don't worry.
Yeah,
and then when you question that stuff, you have certain CEOs of certain hospitals that call you, a conspiracy theory. And it's like, what? I mean, it's right in front of our faces. And then when you have, I love it because it's such perfect big government control. You've got Clay Goddard out there a couple of weeks ago. The numbers are coming down, and that shows the mask mandate's working. Yesterday, well, we've got a spike in numbers, but the mask mandate's working. So no matter what happens, it's working. It's proof that it's working. It's like climate change. You know, if it's a drought, it's climate change. If floods, climate change. If, a lot of snow, it's climate change. If no snow, it's climate change. I mean, it's just constant with these folks, and that's why they lose credibility, is because no matter what the outcome is, they say what they've done is working. I mean, it makes it laughable.
Yeah.
We've got Dr. John Lilly with us. I want to go ahead and get the latest update on the traffic and then with Don Luzader, and then continue on with Dr. Lilly of the Locke and Smith Foundation. I'm Nick Reed on Springfield's Talk 104.1, along with Dr. John Lilly of the Locke and Smith Foundation.
Well, I came across something from the American Academy of Family Physicians that was kind of interesting. They have a conference every year in some big location, a great big conference. Well, this year they're doing it virtually, and I'm not going to be participating, but I downloaded the syllabus of all the classes that they're having. And among the normal things that you have, like syncope case studies, chronic pain, fibromyalgia, and opioid alternatives, upper body injury evaluation and management, there was one that says, racism in healthcare, taking action. I said, okay. And I found on the AAFP website, a little thing about implicit bias. Did you know you had implicit bias?
Well, I'm white, so yes. And
well,
a man.
It is everybody. Oh. Everybody. It is unconscious bias, and it defines attitudes and stereotypes that affect our understanding, actions, and decisions in an unconscious manner. So we're not even conscious of it. And it is pervasive. It is distinct from conscious stereotyping or prejudice. It is expressed indirectly. It can be unlearned. It is not always negative. It is accessible through introspection, and it is always consistent with our own in-groups. And it's something it's not something that you should feel guilty about. So this is trying to define, to say, why do we have different health outcomes? And it's not because different people choose to do things differently.
Okay.
It is the doctor's fault because we are implicitly biased. We don't even know about it. So this is a whole course on, trying to, why do we have this implicit bias? And for the clinician, it goes by their prior experiences, and implicit biases goes into their attitudes and behaviors brought into the clinical encounter that leads to differential treatment and adherence and differential outcomes.
Well,
so it's...
No, I'm really glad.
Bias.
That, yeah. Well, I'm glad though that because I know if I'm going in for some sort of life-saving treatment, knowing that some of the time that is set aside for the purposes of learning, that's what my doctor may be doing.
Yeah. Now, well, when somebody comes in as diabetic, and I say, well, we need to get your A1C down to 7. Here's a way to do it. If they don't achieve that, it's not because they don't want to do it and they don't follow the directions and don't take medicine. It's because I have an implicit bias. So,
oh, Lord. There's a story about there's a cardiologist that was on the staff at University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and had written a paper on affirmative action and how the findings showed that it wasn't anything that improved people's health or helped when it came to patients in terms of meaningful outcome. And he has been removed from a fellowship program because of his findings. I mean, we're getting
right
to the point where, doctors, it doesn't matter whether they're good at their job or know medicine or, and it's now, do you follow the narrative? And it's this, it's frightening. It's scary. We're going to end up now, it doesn't matter how good of a doctor you are, how good of a surgeon you are. Do you pass a little litmus test of beliefs? And I mean, it is so authoritarian. It's very frightening. It's very scary.
And when you get the leading organizations in organized medicine that are leading the charge in this, how do you combat that?
Yeah. I mean, once upon a time, and I think we're still this way in some areas, but, find out that I've got brain cancer. I'm like, all right, who's your best? I want your best. Well, now it's going to be, well, now here we've got all of our doctors that are recognize that gun control is a health crisis, so they passed that test. They all support affirmative action. And that's going to be the new test. We don't really have best in terms of outcome or how good they actually do their job. But Just so you know, they all believe that climate change is a health crisis that needs to be addressed. That's what we're in. That's the direction we're going.
Well, it's. I hope it doesn't get to that point. It's still, medicine is still generally scientifically based, but when I start seeing this creep into, the common CME activities in a major medical organization, you know, you start thinking, oh my gosh, are we going to start getting to the thought police?
Well, sure. And then the problem is, and that's what will happen, anyone who raises their hand and said, is this really something that's going to help us do our jobs in a meaningful manner? Then you are ostracized, you are criticized, and you know they will. Well, in some instances, like the case with this affirmative action piece that was written by that cardiologist, you lose a job. And I mean, I think there are a number of examples of this in a broader scale where just a few years ago, the idea of, you know, if the idea that if you were opposed to girls being forced in high school to take showers with boys who identify as girls, you know, that was just so wacky. But now if you oppose it, you're presented as some sort of transphobic individual and you're filled with hate. And it's like, how did this happen, you know?
Well, that goes back to Frederick Bastiat 150 years ago, or 170 years ago now, when he wrote the law. And, you know, he said, if you pass some law that takes from one individual and gives it to another individual, you know, abolish that law immediately. If you let it go, it can develop into a system. Well, you know, now we've got a system of laws that essentially put the government in control of a big part of our livelihood. And then once they start having monetary control, then you get into thought control. You get into hate crimes. So, well, if I shoot somebody, generally I'm not going to love them, so it's not the action. Yeah. You get extra time because of your thought.
We're talking with Dr. John Lilly of the Locke and Smith Foundation. I tell you what really does concern me, and it's not just local or not just national, but we see it locally as well. This apparent mind shift, this approach from some in the medical community, and once upon a time, at least this is my perception, those in the medical community, their mindset was to be as educated as possible when it comes to all things, you know, health. And then people, you know, you offer up your services. You essentially, as a store, open up and say, if you want to stay healthy, come to us and we will help provide you the information and the resources to do that. Or if you are sick, come to us and we will use our knowledge to diagnose you and then provide you the information you need in order to get better. And then if we have products or services that can do that, those will be offered to you as well. And it was that sort of relationship. It was a voluntary relationship. But some in the medical community now seem to think that it is their job to make sure, against people's will even, whether they want it or not, to that people behave in a manner that they feel will lead them to be healthy. And they have this I think it is an unfortunate relationship with governments now, and we see it again here locally, where that seems to be the mindset of people in health, some now, that their job isn't to provide information to people who come to them voluntarily, but it is to direct government to tell people how to live their lives so that they are healthy. And that's a totally different, that's the difference between a free society where people get to freely assemble and authoritarian one where somebody gets to pick and choose how people live their lives. And that's worrisome. That those relationships never come out good. Never do people in the end benefit from that.
And that gets back to where those authoritarian people in government think that they can actually control citizens and change habits just by mandating it. When in reality, unless a person wants to change, they're not going to change. I get one or two or three people come, you know, every year come in and they've lost a lot of weight. So, well, what'd you do? And they all say, I decided to lose weight.
Yeah.
It's not the government wanted me. It's not somebody else. It is I decided to lose weight. I decided to quit smoking.
Right.
Whatever it
drinking,
is.
Drinking, gambling,
whatever
these things,
it is.
Drugs.
And you ask any addiction specialist, and they will tell you, unless the individual chooses to do it for themselves, they will fail.
Yeah.
It's not, well, I'm doing this for my wife. I'm doing this for my kids. They're not going to succeed. When they come in and say, no, I want to do this for me, then they've got a chance to succeed.
Well, it's a tremendously difficult thing anyhow, even for people who want to do it for themselves desperately. So the idea that, you know, embarking on some sort of journey of improvement that is that difficult that someone would decide to do it successfully because someone else wants them to when they don't want to, it's just ludicrous. But so many do operate under that. You know, they just think we can make people do it. We can make people do it.
Right.
Yeah. Dr. John Lilly, thank you as always. Appreciate your knowledge and providing it to all the people who are listening. And
all right.
You have a fantastic weekend.
You too.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I am Nick Reed. Something I've learned in life is that no matter how well you do something, unexpected scenarios pop up, right? A1 Custom Car Care, they know that as well, which is why they offer 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty on much of their work. Because, you know, you can get the best parts, you can have the best talent, you can have the best motivation, but still things are going to happen. It's how you deal with it when they do that makes a difference. You know, you could, when you've got that top-notch level of service, you could easily have the attitude when something comes back, be like, well, I can tell you this, we didn't do that because we don't make mistakes. A1 Custom Car Care, they put you front of the line. If you're within that 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty, they say you go front of line. It's not back of the line. Well, we got to fix this. It's going to be our cost. So we can get you in 3 weeks from now. We're just really, but you go to absolute front of the line because they want to make good on anything that occurs, whether it, you know, is because of their work or otherwise. You know, maybe just a part went bad. Whatever these things happen, that's how they deal with it. At A1 Custom Car Care, Fort and Sunshine, Springfield Highway 60 and Republic and West Sunset across from Classic Rock Coffee. And now Don Luzader with news.
And good Friday morning. A 3-year-old boy is okay after taking a tumble and falling into a pool near the Rivercut Golf Course in Springfield. KTTS News reported on this incident soon after it happened on Thursday. The Greene County Sheriff's Office is telling us the boy never lost consciousness and an adult pulled him out of the water soon after he fell in. He was taken to the hospital just as a precaution. Missouri coronavirus cases increasing by 1,267 on Thursday with 2 new deaths reported. Arkansas has more than 650 new cases and 9 new deaths. And the Stone County Health Department says 8 people have tested positive for COVID-19 after a church revival in Crane. More than 100 people attended the nearly week-long revival at New Life Fellowship Church, but there are apparently no social distancing measures in place there. 67 people have been quarantined as a result of that outbreak. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert forecast. It is going to be a sunny day, high of 89. May feel like mid-90s. Clear 70 tonight, slight chance of shower storms, high of 90 tomorrow. Sunday, Monday, sunny, 87 at 70. And partly cloudy. Tom Martz at the Lock and Smith Foundation, way out in the middle of nowhere. Out north, where you said.
You know, listening to Don's story, that quadrupled the population of Crane.
Yeah, Crane is tight. Well, speaking of, you're outside of a villa. You must be in the middle of nowhere if you're outside of a villa.
Yeah, I'm northwest of a villa, so I'm out here in the nowhere land.
I used to know half of a villa because I knew a family that lived there. I think I was about half a villa when I was in high school. I think some of them are still there.
I think there's a sign, if I'm not mistaken, at one point in time, I remember it, and I thought it was a villa where it said population 22 and one old fart, but that sign's been taken down a long time ago.
I don't know what happened to the old fart. Well, he may have been the one that maintained that sign. Perhaps gone.
It's a neat little community, and I bet you it was hopping when Route 66 was popular.
Well, in all of the times, I can't count the number of times that I've been in a villa or through a villa. Many of them were after I was old enough to go into such an establishment, but there is a little bar there. It's supposed to have some of the best hamburgers in the world. Now, I don't know if that's true. That's just what people say. I think it's even been written up before as having, great, I think it's burgers. And I'm not sure the name of the place, but it's right there in that main 96 that goes through.
Yeah, it's on the north side of the highway. I mean, the villa used to be well known for a Missouri Highway Patrol speed trap, too.
Oh.
It drops from 65 to 55, and they would sit in there all the time and just do a landslide business.
Well, yeah, if you blink, you miss it. That's for sure.
That's it.
Now, do you have any particular updates or information regarding any of the recall efforts or anything within that realm?
I have been asked to explain the purposes of the two city charter changes that we are requesting, because people seem to be a little bit confused, because what happens is when you write these referendums up, it's not allowing you to see what it is that you're changing and what it is that you're trying to insert.
Okay.
So basically, what we want to do is Section 14.2 of the city charter allows for any time an emergency declaration is declared on a city ordinance and it's passed, we're stuck with it, according to the city charter.
Right.
There is nothing that the people can do to eliminate that ordinance, which in my view is completely the opposite of Article 1. Section 1 and through Article 1, Section 3 of the Missouri Constitution, where it says the people are the controllers of government, not the government being the controllers of people. So what we're doing with this charter change is we're eliminating the application that an emergency declaration means that you're stuck with it if city council passes it. This will allow for a referendum process on any city ordinance that is passed by city council.
Okay. That makes sense. Seems like the sort of thing most people would support.
Yeah, but I mean, back in the mid-50s, I think it was, when the city charter was passed, people weren't really in tune to how a republic functions versus how a democracy functions. So they willingly handed over their power to a governmental entity and said, you can do whatever you want as long as you declare an emergency, because people like you know better than people like us.
Right.
That's one of the things that we deal with in our Missouri Constitution class, is people need to understand that they are the governors of the governors. Even though we're the governed, we are to control those people, and we've done an absolute horrible job of it.
Yeah, shame
on the 50-plus years that I've been alive.
Now, before we move on to the second, just so people know, what happens when enough signatures are gathered?
When enough signatures are gathered, they will be submitted to the city clerk. They will be verified to determine whether or not enough of Springfield City residents actually signed the petitions. And then once they have been verified and that we have achieved the number that we're supposed to get, then it will be up to city council to put this on the ballot at an election time frame. I think it's the next election that falls in line with the confirmation of the signatures being correct.
Got it. Okay.
and then that would determine, then the people in the city of Springfield would be able to determine whether or not they would choose to take back their government from the government, or whether they choose to allow the government to run roughshod over them like they have for 50 plus years.
All right, I want to take a break and then have you explain the second of the two that you have been asked to elaborate on with Tom Arts of the Lock and Smith Foundation. I'm Nick Reed. This is Springfield's Talk 104.1. Tom Arts of the Lock and Smith Foundation with us, talking about two of the attempts or areas of the city charter that there's an attempt to make alterations to by the citizens of Springfield. What is the other of the two?
Section 14.14, right now it prohibits a city council member from being recalled in the first 6 months of their term and the last 6 months of their term. They only serve 2-year terms, so basically they are protected
for half the term.
Actually it's more than half, because the way it's worded in the city charter, it's based on the election cycle, and because I cannot get a call back from the city clerk, I don't know if they consider the election cycle the actual primary that's in February, if they consider it the actual election cycle in April when they're elected, because if they go on the ballot in February and they have a challenger and the challenger wins, then they're automatically removed from council anyway. So I'm not too sure of where the verbiage sits on which election they have decided to do that on.
Yeah.
So what we're requesting is the availability to recall a city official, excluding the first 6 months, because it does take a little time for somebody to get involved in the process, to know what they're doing, and there are applications where, you know, the vote may be taken. They're not. You got to give them time to learn the position, basically, even though they should already know the position going in. But we're going to allow that flexibility of the 6 months. But we're eliminating the last 6 month time frame, and we're including the availability that if the recall election and the election for them to be reelected coincide with one another, whichever one ends up having the most votes is the one that carries the weight of the day.
Okay, interesting.
So you realistically could vote for Mayor McClure in April and recall Mayor McClure at the same time. And if the recall has more votes than does the availability of him serving as mayor again, he would be recalled.
Interesting. There are so many things that could be changed. I mean, those are obviously really important ones. And you take obviously the ones that are biggest, and those certainly seem to be the really significant ones. And they are protection, if you will, set up, whether they're set up that way or not, but they provide protection, not for the people, but for those elected officials, and it takes away the ability of the people to hold them accountable. And I think it seems to me, to put that to a vote, you're going to have a really significant win. I just can't imagine most people saying, no, we don't want to have a say in this manner to the degree that this would allow us to. I just don't think that'll happen.
Well, even parts of the city charter that it's as plain as the nose on your face that says that you cannot hold a position of city council if you have a contract with the city. It gets so – the city council has basically created this application. Oh, that's confusing. No, it's not.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
It's straightforward. And when she was up on to run, because she was trying to fulfill an empty seat. So her first portion of her term, she was not elected. She was appointed.
We're talking about Fisk. Fisk here.
Yeah, Fisk. At the time of her appointment, that part of the city charter was actually sent to city council and said, look, she cannot be appointed to this position because she is in violation of this section of the city charter. They thumbed their nose and said, well, we don't care. That's the individual that we're putting there. At that point in time, I think it was Wickmer who was the city attorney back then. I think he has the power to say, whoa, wait a minute. We can't do that. It is in violation of the city charter. It does not require a judge to rule on that. You can't put her in office because this is here.
Well, like you said,
and they ignored it.
Yeah, and I know these people I don't mean personally, but I know how they think. I know how they behave, and what happens is these rules that would normally prevent them from doing what it is they're going to do, like financially benefiting directly or indirectly from contracts with the city and being on the council, that's absolutely forbidden. And of course, that's what is one of the points here of contention, because I don't think anyone's denied that Fisk has financially benefited directly or indirectly from city contracts. I mean, the city has contracted some of their stuff. But anyway, what happens is in their minds, they think, well, that stuff is set up to prevent corrupt people from taking advantage of their position of power. But that's not what I'm doing. I'm simply providing a service. And I mean, they would contract with me anyway, so it doesn't count. So in their minds, and that's why these people in elected office, they oftentimes violate, whether it's campaign finance rules or whatever the rules are that are set up, because they don't think it applies to them. It's just meant to keep bad people from taking advantage of the system, and that's not what they're doing. So it's okay for them to do it, and that's why they do this stuff. And they don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Well, they don't, because the people have, according to the court system and according to the legal system, the people realistically don't have the availability to enact a legal recourse in this manner, because it all goes through it has to be funneled through the system. Well, who's in control of the system? It's supposed to be us, but it's the people in government, which is why you got delay after delay after delay. That's why
joke.
You also have judge after judge after judge after judge who's recusing themselves to do all these other things. I mean, there were a couple judges in this area that I actually had respect for, but man, that respect has gone completely down the toilet.
Yeah,
right now.
There were a couple names that I was surprised to hear, not that they recused themselves, but that they waited so long to do it. And I've taken a cautious approach on this because I recognize I don't necessarily know how that process works. And let me give people, tag them in here on what we're referencing now. And this is the conversations we've had with Christy Fulnecki, whose services as an attorney have been tapped by citizens in different capacities to try and defend their liberties. And in Springfield, it's regarding the mask mandate. And there was a gal who was suing the city. And so Christy had put in this, I always forget the legal terminology, but basically requesting an immediate pause on that until the courts have the time to determine whether or not the city had the right to do what they were doing. And I remember when it happened, she said, well, this time next week we should have an answer. But a judge would get it, and then after like 3 or 4 days, recuse him or herself, and then it would go to another judge, and they'd wait 3 or 4 days and recuse themselves. And so I thought, well, maybe it takes that long to do that. I don't know how the process works. But she explained a situation. She didn't name names. She said, but there were two attorneys in this area that were having some sort of, I think it was divorce or child custody case situation. And within 2 days, every single judge that had a conflict of interest had already recused themselves within 2 days. Well, that tells me that's possible then, that this should not be going on 3 weeks into 4 weeks, that it's possible to, within just a matter of days, to have every judge who would be a conflict to recuse himself. And so it does, it makes people cynical, and it makes it appear as if, well, here you've got, again, two levels of justice, one for the haves and those who are in the clique, in the bubble, but then there's the rest of us, and the rest of us are just average citizens. And, you know, it's not a positive thing, in my opinion.
Oh, it's like that game that we used to play when I was kids before your time. It was a hot potato, and you would you'd have it in your hands, and you'd hold it as long as you possibly could, and then you'd throw it to the next person, and they would hold it. Well, you got to the point, as you got smarter, you realized that the further down the line you were in order, the colder that potato was getting. So you didn't want to be the person who got it first or second or third or fourth. You wanted to be the person who got it eighth, ninth, and tenth, because by then the potato had cooled off and you could hold it a lot longer and you could win the game.
Rig the system, rig the game. Hey, fine, we've got
that's what you do when you're poor.
Tom Arts of the Lock and Smith Foundation. Final question. Someone had texted in. Could you please ask Tom how we can find petitions to sign? We're not on Facebook, and we're having difficulty finding much information about them. And, so people that aren't on Facebook, oftentimes they do have a difficult time finding information because so many people do use it to get that info out. But even if you're not on Facebook, you should still be able to access, I would imagine, that information on Facebook with you all. Or what? I guess you can best answer that question.
Well, the easiest thing to do is, and there's another email, but I don't have it memorized off the top of my head. But for right now, the easiest thing to do is to go to lockandsmith.com, go to the contact link, and that will send and generate an email automatically to all the board members, of which I'll get it as well. Okay. And people can send a message to say, I'd like to sign the petitions. Where can I meet you? Can you bring them here? Who has them in my area? Of course, I'm not going to give out names and addresses of people who do have them, but we will make a concerted effort to make sure that anyone who wants to sign the petition, we will deliver them or go to a place to meet them that allows them to come out and to sign them and make it so that it's legitimate.
Yeah. And what's that email again?
Go to lockandsmith.com.
Got it.
And find our website.
There. And that's
Go to the contact us link.
L-O-C-K-E.
Correct. Always with an E.
Always with an E. Lockandsmith.com, and then go that route. All right. Very good. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it.
You betcha, man.
All right. Take care. Tom Arts, Lock and Smith Foundation. I'm Nick Reed. Here is Don Luzader with the latest traffic on Springfield's Talk 104.1.